88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Where you're listening to The Space Show. The Carmen Project is an effort to set the groundwork for strategic discussions on the future of space cooperation for positive effect. It aims to remind everybody that space is fundamental to the human experience and that achieving true global cooperation can position space as an equalizer for humanity. Well, this is a promotional feature for the Carmen Project, narrated by Shelley Peregrine.
In the beginning, there was chaos, the immaterial, the unknown, a gaping void of darkness. And then, bam! Nothingness was turned inside out, into everything. Ever since, through years of evolution, the soul of ancient myths, the emergence of religion, philosophy, and science, humanity has always come back to the same question. Why do we exist? Sky, searching for something more. Dreaming. Humans, made of the same fabric. Chasing the most ambitious answers. Aiming for the stars, until we reach them together. Master our own limits. Limits of knowledge, of space, of time. We continue to explore, failing along the way, and growing as one. Was turned into everything. Now the question is, what's next?
In our conversation with Zilin Bai, mention was made of Starlink. Well, SpaceX is launching thousands of communication satellites into low Earth orbit. The aim is to connect the people of the Earth. Well, this feature, The Beauty of Satellite Communication, features Jonathan Hofeller, the Vice President of Starlink Commercial Sales at SpaceX, and there's also others in this feature.
Once I got told that if you kick a ball strong enough, it will eventually keep orbiting around the planet. I closed my eyes and imagined thousands of them moving around me. And I got lost.
To me, it feels like when you're watching those satellites fly across the sky, and even when they're in orbit, it's in my mind, it's this peaceful dance, right?
There's a moment of pure absence when you close your eyes, right before you start seeing something through your eyelids. At the beginning, you feel lonely. I start thinking that I'm a drop of blood in the ocean. Wandering. Or that the earth is burning and I see it through a window. It doesn't feel right. I imagine being naked. I often dream about floating in space. Thinking about what people can see from up there. The story says that there are thousands of dots harmoniously moving around the blue planet. I imagine them being able to receive something from us, reflecting it back to others. And I feel safe, kind of. That way I could talk to everyone without really needing a specific language. My language would consist of more than just words. Light bulb.
Have been held back and somewhat prevented from being able to prosper and educate and just communicate. And we've seen this in a number of cases, some of the schools that we've connected, some of the indigenous tribes that we've connected, just an immense number of applications that require connectivity across the globe. You know, there's community centers, children's centers, women's shelters. It's just a number of applications that it's been very heartwarming to see that effect on people.
Australian Chris Boshuizen is a space industry entrepreneur. He answers the question, can we all access space with innovative ideas?
All of us have in our pocket more space capability than the USSR had when they launched Sputnik. And you can do that. In fact, if you ask your mom to mortgage the house, you can run your own space program as big as the USSR in 1957. And I love that little fact because it blows people's minds that they're literally walking around with an entire, you know, space agency's worth of technology in their pocket. I think it was that moment where the goal was like, oh, well, I didn't know I could do that. And I think that's the key thing for me is a lot of people don't know actually how accessible space is these days, and they're actually allowed to do it. It's not up to governments anymore. You can do it if you want. Putting a phone in space is a really great place to start.
And that was Chris Boshuizen, co-founder of Planet and a partner at DVC. He now works in San Francisco. Now on to Feng Yan, the co-founder and chief executive officer of Spacity.
When I started to get into the space industry, I always believed that for the man, going to space is... it's a very normal thing. So many years ago, the fish went to the land, and then we have animals, right? And some animal, they got dinosaur, they got wings, and then we have birds, and then we got astronaut want to go to space, go to moon, and I believe in a couple of years, maybe 5 years, people can land on Mars. So I think people, human being get to space is like fish on the land, and the dinosaur get on the air, the same thing. But for the space traveling, that's a very long way to go. But right now, my dream, I want to make space industry affordable. I think the biggest problem for space industry before is it's so expensive, so freaking expensive. That's why I like Elon Musk. His rocket is not the best one, but his rocket is the cheapest one. His satellite is not the best one, but he can build thousands or tens of thousands satellites, and that's the most, and that's the cheapest one. And so many people can use that, can afford satellite, can afford the rocket. So that's my dream. That's the book I'm reading right now. Very classic one. After 20 years on the street, somebody meet a guy and ask him, what is your job? And this guy answered, I am a rocket scientist. And that guy said, oh, it's a very normal job. That's all. Why I said that? Because 30 years ago, when you get on the street and you meet a guy, he's a software programmer. And you will say, oh my God, you are so brilliant. You are so clever. It's a very fascinating job. And after 30 years, right now, you find a guy, he's a software programmer. Okay, it's a very normal job. I want, after 20 years, you are a rocket scientist, you are a satellite engineer. If that happened, the space industry is very affordable. Everybody is using satellite and everybody goes to the space. Like, for example, I took her to watch the movie called Interstellar. That's a perfect movie for father and a daughter to watch. And my daughter, after watch the movie, my daughter asked me, oh, mom, wow, your job is so great. I'm so happy. And I took her to watch some eclipse and to watch the International Space Station get across the sky at night. It's very hard to watch. And she always gets so surprised and is so happy to do those stuff with me. Yeah, so I can convince her it's a very interesting thing to get a job in space. When I started Spacetee, I don't want Spacetee to be a Chinese company. I want Spacetee to be an international company. I think the space industry is naturally an international business. It's global. It's interesting. So I just said that we want to get people from different industry to work together to find a better way. Also, I want to build an international team to cooperate together and to build a more international culture and to make the company better. Not only space, in many things, one country cannot solve that question, like COVID-19, like the pandemic. This kind of question cannot solve by one country. Every country should work together to deal the same problem. If we don't have trust, we cannot solve them. Like for space, the same. I just said we have to build trust and work together to face the bigger problems.
And that was Feng Yang, the founder and chief executive officer of Spacetee. And he was reading Jules Verne's novel From the Earth to the Moon, and as you heard, wants to make rocket science a normal job. Well, now to New Zealand and David Calder. In 1984, he recorded this song called The Late Great Planet Earth, and it's about Voyager 1 and 2, spacecraft that have now exited the solar system, and Earth's population explosion and the damage humans are doing.
Mm-hmm. There's a capsule heading into outer space, carrying a message from the human race. And sometime just the other night, it left our solar system on an unknown flight. How I wish that I had written this song, put it out on a CD and sent it along, with some rhythm and blues and the fun. So long from the late great planet Earth. Small world, you're probably not aware of it. Big enough for each to have a share of it. I can't say that we took good care of it. The late great planet Earth. On the whole, people's intentions were good. Care of each other the best they could, but it was all based on a fatal flaw. Those with more than enough wanting even more. If you come across this galaxy and you find yourself in our vicinity, you might even fly through the debris of the late great planet Earth. It's hard to believe. It's true. She spun through the blackness, shining white and blue. But all it took was just one fool to end the late great planet Earth. Sometimes in the middle of the night, when I'm lying awake till the early light, I can't stop. A capsule heading into outer space with some intelligence from the human race. But it was all based on a fatal flaw. Those with more than they need wanted more and more and more. You wouldn't really credit it or say that any creature would merit it. But tell me, who would the meek to inherit it? The late great planet Earth. The meek to inherit the late great planet Earth. You couldn't say that we took good care of it.
The late great planet Earth.
All it took was just one thing.
From New Zealand, 1984, David Calder, about the Voyager 1 and 2 and the bad things we're doing to our planet. This is The Space Show.
88.3 Southern FM, local and live.
And this is The Space Show, and we're looking at the Karman Project. Now, when this next feature was recorded, Catherine Bennell was Capability Robotics Automation at the Australian Space Agency in Adelaide, South Australia. And her dream at that time was to be an astronaut.
For me, my dream has always been to explore outer space. as a child, I love to look up at the stars and would get this wonderful feeling just for a moment where I felt in awe of how large the universe is and, you know, how much remains to be discovered. Probably if I told my friends, I would have been totally teased. But for me, it was just such a passion. You know, I wanted to stand on the surface of those new worlds, to look upon those new horizons with my own eyes. And being a young kid, the only visible kind of thing to be in that journey was an astronaut. And for me, it wasn't enough just to want to be an astronaut. I'd planned my whole life out in my head to be an astronaut. And, you know, so I set out to find out how. And, you know, according to astronaut Tim Peake, the British astronaut, he's written in his book that there's three main ways to become an astronaut. The first is to apply to your country's space program and work hard to be a good candidate. My country didn't have a space program. The second was to become a billionaire and fund your own way. Doesn't sound too bad, but money doesn't really drive little kids. And the third is become rich and then eventually die and then send your ashes into orbit. And that's not a great option either. So I went back to one and I went overseas and pursued my dream to try and achieve that. But, you know, becoming an astronaut isn't something that can be reached on a linear career path. And there might be just a couple of chances for anyone to apply or none at all. And so all you can do is look out for those opportunities and think about what motivates you. And for me, as I mentioned earlier, it was just that spirit of discovery. And there's a lot of ways to do that in the space industry. So I started out, you know, as a space engineer on future missions, looking at what scientists want to know and designing missions to answer those questions. And then I moved on to a running mission called LISA Pathfinder, which is looking at gravity waves and potentially opening up a whole new spectrum to explore the universe. And then I moved overseas and looked at, hey, how do we preserve space by removing space debris from orbit and looking into how can we go up and capture satellites? And that was really interesting technology. And then I had the opportunity to work on concepts for exploration, the Lunar Gateway and the ISS and augmented reality systems for astronauts and innovation, project management, and then Bartolomeo. So through that, I'm continuing to progress what I love. And I suppose that dream's still in the back of my mind. But what I have done is maximize my chances by working really hard. And I really enjoyed and I will continue to enjoy what I'm doing. I've lived across more than 6 countries now and to achieve the most sought after qualifications and skills that keep me motivated, but also keep that dream alive. And whether I ever become that astronaut or not, who knows, I'll never regret, you know, striving to do so. And I have and will remain committed to help explore outer space from Earth and to try and further the vision for space exploration. I never thought I'd have the chance to help grow an entire country's space program, their space capability, and help to, or actually define their visions for where we want to be in the next 10 years. And it's an absolute pleasure to do it. I'm not sure what I'll do next. Hopefully I'll just look to the next hill on the journey that along the path that motivates me. And for me, what I really like is, making sense of complex systems and complex problems, whether that's a technology, a spacecraft, a roadmap to how a nation will build space capability, and doing that with a team. So for me, it's about discovering how to do something, and the motivation for discovering that how is the why, the question that we might answer through what we're creating. So, yeah, if you're discovering a planet every day, you're in pure discovery. And if you're designing the telescope for how to look at that planet, you're creating something that can be used for discovery by many. So,
well, since Catherine Bennell from the Australian Space Agency recorded that, she applied to the European Space Agency to become an astronaut. And guess what? She came very nearly to achieving that. And then the Australian Space Agency said, well, you come so close, we might as well pay for you to go there. And she went and trained as an astronaut. And so she's now qualified to go into space as a bona fide Australian astronaut. We'll see what happens in the future to Catherine. Now, we're looking at the Carmen Project, and Hannah Ashford is the Director of Community and Fellowship at the Carmen Project. In response to the question, what inspires you most in regards to your work in the space sector? This is what she had to say.
I think that everyone, when it comes to space, will have these sort of formative moments in our lives that we remember. And, you know, whether it's sort of watching astronauts be launched into space, or a rover being landed on Mars, or, you know, in our case on the Carmen Project, we hear very personal stories of these people. And, you know, it's one thing to see a YouTube video, a YouTube live stream of someone going off into space, and then it's another to actually have a relationship with that person, as, you know, many people within our community do. So I think we all have these formative experiences which sort of touch us. But I think with me, I'm really inspired by the everyday and by all of the sort of behind the scenes things that, quite frankly, I was not aware of at all until I started working in the space sector. And I think having an understanding of all of these small behind the scenes things that are happening, and then understanding the profound impact that they're having on Earth, that is more inspiring to me than anyone's story. One thing that Tomo was saying, which sort of really stuck with me and I think comes back to this wider community of space, was, you know, space is really basically ready to kill you. You know, there is, everything is against you in space. And when you go out there, all of the elements are against you. And one way to think about it is that when you're an astronaut in space, there is just a piece of aluminium between you and your death. But the way that Toma thinks about it, which is something that really resonated with me, is that it's not just a piece of aluminium between you and your death. It's that plus an army of thousands of people who have worked to protect you and to get you to this point. And I really think that that sort of captures this essence of the space community, that, you know, we will see that one element of a rocket launch or of a landing or of, you know, the capsule docking on the ISS. But for that moment, the years and the lives and the dedication and the study and, you know, the amount of human resources and effort and dreams that have gone into that is just incredible to me. And I think that it really captures that that sort of 360 degree angle, that space, you know, it just broadens our horizons. And I really loved that anecdote from Tama, because I think it just, it speaks to community at its core. And I think that's something that inspires me when I think about that. I think when it comes sort of conceptually to dreaming, my instinct is to think big. So when people say, okay, what do you dream about, or what do you consider to be dreaming? I really think about, okay, those who sort of push the boundaries, explore limits beyond their normal realms, and really, again, push us as a species to move our experiences forward. And I think this is certainly true. And I am grateful for all of those bold characters and entrepreneurs and, you know, the people who can really turn the, you know, I wonder into the, I think, into the, I know. And I really like that journey that dreaming can sort of help to facilitate. But I think what is also interesting to me, and I think it's something as well that I have noticed as a person who has had the privilege, certainly, of living on different sides of the world and operating within different communities, is that I think that we as a generation, and when I say generation, I sort of speak generally about the younger generation. So say as those who will be the custodians of planet Earth for the next 50 plus years. I think that our collective shared dreams are actually quite modest in their form. And I think that that is something that has really struck me and resonated with me as I have sort of moved around the globe and come into contact with different people in different communities. And I believe that what we dream of at a very fundamental collective level is just really equality in various forms. So in forms of gender representation, or in forms of race, religious expression, accessibility of different opportunities of education, of food, of healthcare. And I really believe that these are actually quite humble and modest dreams. And I mean, But this is what we as a generation in various communities in various parts of the world that we sort of speak of and wish for. And I think while these dreams of our generation are sort of modest in their form, you know, I'm under no illusion that they are easily achievable. And I think that, you know, achieving equality in all of these realms requires courageous conversation, it requires diplomacy, it requires a lot of policy reform, and indeed it requires a lot of systemic change. So I really think that my instinct when it comes to dreaming is I immediately think big. But then when I really think about our collective dream as, say, a generation, I actually think that it's sort of quite humble and quite modest. And that's something that, in one sense, the optimist in me loves, because then I think it's quite achievable. And that also drives me in terms of understanding my place to contribute to that dream.
And that was Hannah Ashford from the Carmen Project. And now to Helene Hubi. She's visionary, co-founder and chair of the Carmen Project, and she's also vice president of the Orion Mission. And she explains why she thinks it is important to bring people to the moon in the context of settlement of Mars.
We are currently expanding the boundaries of our life habitats. So we are exploring the universe and we want to settle in you know, in the moon first and then in Mars. And this is, I think, just part of who we are as humans. We've already pushed the boundaries of explorations, and it's just like music or like art or like spirituality or whatever. It's just part of who we are as humans. So I'm convinced we'll go to Mars and probably farther in the coming future. And so in this journey, moon is the first step of that journey. It's a step where you can learn a lot, because to settle on Mars, there are many question marks. How are you going to produce electricity, for example? How are you going to ensure communication, for example, et cetera, et cetera. There is also the question of sustainability, and because if you go there, it takes you 6 months to go there, so you better have thought through a plan which is a minimum sustainable, because of course you'll not be able to carry if you everything you need, and then if you want to go back, it will take another minimum 6 months, right? So it's much better to have a playground which is a few days far from the Earth, and where you can already kind of mimic what life could be on Mars, and where you can solve very important challenges, as I was saying, like, you know, energy, for example. In a place which is not too far from the Earth. So, and then something which is especially interesting in the moon is that you have tons of water ice, so water. And with water, of course, you can produce propellant because the spacecrafts, they use liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, or they use liquid methane. So the moon is a great refueling station, if I may say so, to explore the universe further. The moon is really here, the first step to learn how to live in a sustainable manner before we go to Mars.
That was Helene Hubi. Now, William Gerstenmaier is Vice President of Mission Assurance at SpaceX, and he comments on what he thought when he saw Elon Musk launch a Tesla Roadster into space. Now, okay, that's what we're going to have on next week. That's a preview of next week's The Space Show. So we're handing over shortly to Purple Haze, but we've got Richard now fading up our end music.